is Richard LeBlanc. Tune in to Terminal Addiction Monday nights at 1 a.m. for heavy music.
Francomix avec Val on KRVS every Thursday night at 9. C'est formidable.
Public Radio for Acadiana, KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
Good afternoon. It's 3 p.m. Weather for the listening area. Mostly sunny this afternoon with a high of around 92. Heat index at about 103. South winds at 15 miles per hour. This evening, partly cloudy skies with a low of 75. And on Tuesday, scattered showers and thunderstorms expected in the afternoon. Partly sunny otherwise on Tuesday with a high near 91. A 50% chance of precipitation on Tuesday and Tuesday night. Currently, it's cloudy and 90 degrees here on the campus of UL Lafayette. At 4 o'clock, it's All Things Considered from NPR News. We're going to start this hour by heading into the interview studio with Judith Merriweather.
And joining me in the KRVS studios this afternoon, I'm really happy to say, from Lake Charles, a great friend of KRVS, Carolyn Woosley is with me, as well as the head of the McNeese Theater Department, Joy Pace, is with us. And they're here to talk about the Itinerant Theater Incorporated and some wonderful performances that they'll be doing opening this week of the firsts. Carolyn, I know you've been in our studios before to talk about some of these monologues that you wrote, but maybe we should go back just a little bit and talk about, first of all, the idea for the Itinerant Theater, which is the company that you all have formed.
Well, we are very interested in the future of the performing arts and of the live arts, and realized that this is a time of change. It's unusual. It's unprecedented in our society. We therefore decided to stay the course, establish a nonprofit so that we could take tour and produce affordable live theater to underserved audiences. Because people will always want to tell their story. They'll always want to interpret their times. And when a society stops reflecting on its own day, its own era, then trouble is afoot. And we, for example, have noticed that in one prison close to Lake Charles in the De Quincey area, the fellows over there have established their own theater company. Well, this gave us the idea, it was grist for the mill, one of our ideas that inspired us. There are many underserved audiences. Let's go. Let's get there. Let's take the arts to them. A lot of people don't have the means, the wherewithal. And we have the talent, and it's going to be hands-on. It's not just going to be us. It could be an 8-year-old putting makeup on Joy's face or something. You see what I'm saying? We'd be right in the mix. Is the idea, maybe their production, but that is in the future.
And of course, to have a nonprofit organization, that way you're not having to create profit for someone, and you're much freer who you serve and what kinds of performances you do. Makes you artistically much freer.
Much freer. Also, we can address the needs in a very honest way. Louisiana has some, and we're not limited to Louisiana, I want to say that, but Louisiana has some pressing social needs. And we think that if we go out there, that the interest will eventually be generated to support us.
Right. And with these performances of the firsts, you all are addressing the stories of many women who helped to serve some of these needs, very pressing needs in past times. So let's talk just a bit about some of these monologues. How long ago did you start writing these monologues? When did you get this idea to explore women in Louisiana's history?
Well, it was actually, to be honest with you, I was approached. Carol Ann Gale is a producer in Lake Charles, and she wanted to premiere with the Lake Charles Little Theater some stories, and she approached me to create a body of work. And I thought it was a fabulous idea, and came up with Marie-Thérèse Coinquin. We both came up with Kate Chopin. We both, of course, thought of Clementine Hunter. She came up with Caroline Dorman. It was very interesting. I went out and researched and wrote and created a body of work of a half a dozen that premiered at the Little Theater. Adley Cormier, a Brobridge native, was the director. It has since grown to 13 monologues, which I have taken on and discovered over the years. So really, the idea, the seed was 1995. I wrote Nellie Lutcher. Nellie, we've already talked about Nellie. Mm-hmm. Lake Charles honored Nellie, renamed a street after Nellie. She's one of our daughters of the city and the state and of the world, really. As recently as 2007, I wrote Nellie. I just finished in 2011, Cleoma. First Cajun musician published, along with Joe, of course, mm-hmm. Joe and Cleoma Falcon. We hope to world premiere that later this year as a staged reading. In an ideal world, it would be Anne Savoie playing Cleoma. So I'm writing. I mean, for a while there, I said, no more monologues, done. Oh, and then came Nellie. Then I found Maggie in a book, a Fonville Winnan book. What a great woman. And Elizabeth Thomas Werlein has not been produced yet. So the story continues.
Well, and just recently, I think two professors from McNeese, or Janet Allured, published a book of histories of women in Louisiana in history and all of their wonderful activities and service to the state. So there's a lot of material. It seems that people like yourself and others are quite interested in that.
Mm-hmm. Janet Allured, a friend of ours, edited this book with professors from various universities mm-hmm. in Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And certainly it's a wonderful resource and was one of my bibliography for Cleoma in particular. Mm-hmm. But yes, there's a lot of interest. And the thing is that these women they're really telling stories of the human heart. Maggie, Margaret Dixon, the first female managing editor of a major periodical, this is a world premiere, in that character, she becomes at least three men. Mm-hmm. And you can ask, the actress is in the room. So we deeply explore the fellas. So don't feel left out, guys. But we are, yes, focusing on the first. They made a difference because these women are the first female cheerleader in America. Rosa Hart, our own Rosa from Lake Charles, founder of our little theater, longest continuous running in the state. First female forester in America. Caroline Dorman, founder of Kisatchi also, and an eccentric. And let's see, Margaret. I already mentioned Clyde. Margaret Dixon. And then Clyde Connell was an early civil rights activist through her church work with the Presbyterian Church and became an abstract expressionist artist extraordinaire late in life. We've already talked about her. Mm-hmm. But, she had her first show in New York at the age of 80. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's not give up, folks.
Obviously, these women weren't. if you have tuned in just now, I want to tell you that we're talking about a series of performances that will open this week and run for the next 3 weeks, I believe, in Lake Charles, or they'll be separated by several weeks.
I know, it's three weeks.
The Thursdays are Caroline Dorman and Maggie Dixon, and Fridays are Clyde Connell and Rosa Hart.
And that will run for 3 weeks.
Yes, it's consistently right. for the next three
right.
weeks.
Right, exactly. So with me are writers of the monologues, Carolyn Woosley, and Joy Pace is head of McNeese Theater Department. She is acting in the monologues. Which two characters do you play, Joy?
I'm playing Margaret Dixon and Rosa Hart.
All right, well, tell us about your take. I mean, Carolyn has written this, but, I mean, as a professor of theater, and I'm sure you talk to your students a lot about how you take a script and it becomes part of you and you develop it. What's happened to your sense of these women as you have developed the monologues?
Quite a bit. Margaret Dixon is, both of the women are quite fascinating. I was already very familiar with Rosa because of living in Lake Charles mm-hmm. for the past 6 years. But Margaret Dixon was no nonsense. You followed Earl K. Long throughout his career, and as Carolyn said, was one of the was the first female managing editor of the Morning Advocate in Baton Rouge, and just their spunk, their energy, and looking back, as we were talking earlier, women today, or young girls today especially, don't realize how these, you know, the title of this, the first, they made a difference. This was novel that they were the first woman to do such things, and playing Rosa is a little intimidating in Lake Charles with, you know, the Civic Center Theater named after her and many people. And we had one of the consultants on the project was cast by Rosa when she was first moved to Lake Charles. And so several people knew Rosa and several relatives still in town, I believe. But she's an icon of the area. So playing, there's a lot of, I guess, pressure, but I'm really excited because I really actually feel quite connected to both of the women. And there's an energy and personality that I think I share with both of them.
Well, tell us just a bit about Margaret Dixon. Where did she come from? Where did she grow up?
Well, she lives in Prairieville with her husband, Muncie,
mm-hmm.
and lots of dogs. I guess she grew up in that. No, she from New Orleans.
Mississippi, Arkansas.
Oh, that's right. Mississippi, Arkansas, and Louisiana. She moved up and down the Mississippi River. But she went to school at LSU and became a professional journalist before graduating in 28. Huey P. Long himself handed her diploma. But she started at the Times-Picayune in the society section and then was hired to the Morning Advocate and was adamant that she be able to cover the legislature every session and was one of the only women ever there and was the first woman of the press corps, member of the press corps. So she was paving the way but didn't think of herself as any differently. I'm going to do this because mm-hmm. that's what I'm interested in doing. And
mm-hmm.
Was taken very seriously, particularly by Earl K. Long. He knew that she writes what she wants, and that was she was not going to beat around the bush. And she was very shrewd with the politicians, but that was very important to her that she get involved in what she was writing was how she saw it. She said her eyes were open, and she was going to report as what she saw and record it.
She wasn't going to be put back in the fashion department.
Right. No.
What year did she become managing editor of the Morning Advocate?
She was hired away in 1938, but with mm-hmm. the war, the story really is Rosie the Riveter. At some point, it suddenly turns, 180-degree turn. The war starts, the men leave, all except for the sports writer on the weekends, which is in... This is a part of the script.
Right.
But then they hired down 48 women from University of Missouri's School of Journalism overnight. Charles Manship, Charles did it.
Mm.
And then he kept them on after the war at the same pay as a man. So this is in the script. This is a significant story. So therefore, I would say that even though she was working other and always at the legislature by 1941, but certainly... I would put my money on, by 1943, she's the managing editor. Now, this is the first in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what Joyce's saying, press corps and all, that's not in the state. This is in the nation. And she didn't blink an eye.
No. And she was held dear to her heart. She pushed for reform in a lot of things, like the reform of Angola, animal rights, really has a love for dogs. And... just reforming things. She was the mental hospital in Jackson and having separate facilities for the kids and the adults, and she took on causes and saw them through.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, we'll raise Cain until it happens. And
could Joy do an imitation of Earl's voice about standing in front of TV? Because the actor here to my left has to have three different male voices to pull this off. And there's the first time that she does Earl Kent. What is that part? That the very first about he's been campaigning and everything, but he has this distinct opinion about being in front of the television camera. What did he say? So
Governor
Earl Long
says, TV makes me look like a mosquito on two sticks.
So these are really dramatic monologues. They're not just monologue in one person's voice. You're doing different characters.
Yeah, she becomes the Charles Manship, the publisher, C.P. Leiter, who's one of the other administrators at the paper, and the fella from Missouri that sent the Edith Abbott-Gelpy and mm-hmm. Ann Price down from University School of Missouri Journalism.
What are the challenges of doing a monologue as opposed to being on stage with a number of other people?
Well, there's no one talking back to you. There are no cues. It's all you. So, you know, it's a lot of fun because you just go into the world of that woman and of that character and everything around you. You know, we've had some interesting parts of the process, as you know, when we didn't have certain aspects of the set, but now that everything's complete, you know, it makes sense. You know, it's the blocking and everything is part of the writing and is part of the story. So what they're doing, all four of the characters are quite active, actually. We're in the gallery at the Imperial Kalkshu Museum, and there's things for them to do at all times. It's not a lecture. It's a glimpse into their lives, into a moment of their lives.
As an example, Rosa comes in with a bicycle, and she's talking to Buddy. He's a high school student at Lake Charles High, and he's writing a piece of paper. But she's got the mail in her satchel, and she pulls it out, and the show stops because she has gotten the letter of all letters. I am the most excited person, and she goes on, in the United States of America. And of course, I should have Joy saying that for you. But anyway, because she's opening a letter on stage from Life magazine, which comes to Lake Charles and actually did June 14th, 1948, a huge 7-to-10-page spread in Life magazine. And the whole story is about Rosa writing. She's waving the letter the whole time, and she's writing a letter, and she gets worried that they're not going to see it right, they're going to see it wrong, and then she thinks of a good idea, then she thinks of bad, and she starts typing things, and in the middle of it, she has an idea for an ad. She gets totally distracted.
And she entered contests all the time, and that's one of the things I think is really important about Lake Charles. They know that she founded the Lake Charles Little Theater, but I don't think they know that she was the first female cheerleader in the United States.
I think a lot of people think all cheerleaders were always
right.
Female.
That's a lot of the questions. Yeah. What? What do you mean? Mm-hmm. There were men before?
And so there's this whole story about how she got tricked into being a female cheerleader at Tulane, which had all male cheerleaders, which was normal. But they had this new idea to have a gal from Newcomb come over and cheer at the Tulane football team. And it is a big part of the play. I will say it gives you the texture of 1917 to 1920. Because if times changed then, they changed profoundly in the 1920s and the 1960s. Mm-hmm. And we don't get a chance to experience this change of the end of World War I that often in our lives. But you do in Rosa when she tells her story.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, again, a lot of us have this caricature idea of the flappers and the roaring 20s, but we really don't always know the stories of these firsts, these women who are carving their way in so many areas, journalism, forestry.
Mm-hmm. Well, the dresses were Edwardian, and they were long. And then overnight, in about a half year, the hemlines went up, the hair got chopped off. It was an overnight change, and Rosa's here to tell you about it as she, a literary wunderkind at Newcomb, is tricked into being the first cheerleader in America. I didn't know a football from a ball of yarn.
So there's a lot of physical energy in these miles
Yes. Yes. Come to the show.
It's exhausting.
That's what we want to say.
Which is a good thing.
Well, we are talking about the firsts, which open in Lake Charles this week on the 14th. They run Thursdays and Fridays for 3 weeks, and there are different monologues on the two nights. My guest, Carolyn Woosley, is the founder, one of the founders of the Itinerant Theater Company, and Joy is on the board. Joy Pace, head of theater at McNeese, is on the board of the Itinerant Theater. So where are you performing these monologues?
What we do is we are a portable theater company working on a shoestring budget, and so we're going to always be performing in found space. So the space we found for this event, we're working in collaboration with another friend of the arts and culture, which is a local museum, and this is another one of our models. Let's collaborate, let's partner. So to get to your question eventually, Gibson Barham Gallery of the Imperial Kalkashu Museum, which is on 204 West Salier Street. And Salier was the founder of Lake Charles, by the way. But anyway, we're in the gallery, and so it's a three-quarter thrust stage. We just throw like some indoor-outdoor carpeting out. It's about 16 by 14. We have chairs we've put out. We put out about 90. We have capacity for about 100 plus. We have actually Philip Gould Oak Tree is our portable backdrop. And then we have movable props that we move per woman. And so we completely change the set per action. And as we said, on Thursdays you will see Caroline, the eccentric Forrester.
And who plays Caroline?
Molly Markwick mm-hmm. of DeRidder, mm-hmm. and actually a Seattle native. But she's really been, this is about her 30th time to do Caroline. We toured Caroline in 2010. We had the honor of performing Caroline this past October in celebration of the 100th anniversary of the Weeks Act, which established the National Forestry Association. And then Caroline and Maggie is on Thursdays. Maggie's the world premiere with Joy Pace. That's Thursdays, Caroline and Maggie. Friday, the great Clyde from the Shreveport area, Clyde Connell, mm-hmm. and followed by Rosa, a new production of Rosa, who has not been performed since 1999.
And who plays Clyde?
Carol Ann Gale. And Carol Ann Gale, this is, we did the Fringe Festival in New Orleans in 2010, where we did Clyde and Clementine. So this is at least Carol Ann's 30th Clyde. Carol Ann directs Caroline and Clyde, and I direct Maggie and Rosa. This is my debut as a director. And my mentor is my actor.
Sounds there's a whole lot of collaboration and mentoring going on in this theater, which just sounds marvelous.
Oh, it's fun.
For inspiring people and really, I guess, sparking people's creativity.
Well, that should be the nature of theater's collaboration. Mm-hmm.
And
I'm happy to say that our crew are all... we've hired our McNeese Theater students, our hair and makeup assistant stage manager, and our front of house.
Mm-hmm. So they're getting a lot of great professional experience.
And bullets for the resume.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really am enjoying working with this team. Joya and Charles McNeely over at McNeese have allowed me to assistant direct three performances over there, the latest being Pygmalion, which was really an undertaking. And I say that in a really positive way. But I see the students growing just as we grow. I see the stage manager who's running sound and lights getting ideas, and he's bringing them to me to improve lighting, for example. Because we do have our portable equipment we have set up in this art gallery. So it's the same art gallery where we just recently had the Warhol exhibit. And so it is a completely vacant room. It's a lovely space. But it's three quarters, so the audience is right there.
Mm-hmm. About how many people can fit?
I would say maxes out about 100, under 110.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So would you suggest people reserve their tickets ahead of time, or can they do that even?
You can. Definitely, you can go to our website, which is www.itinerantheater.com, and put in both the T's. Itinerantheater.com, and yeah.
Theater is spelled correctly.
Theatre.
In the French way.
And you can always call the 337 number, which is for the will call list, which is 436-6275.
Okay, so get your tickets ahead of time. It is an intimate theater, and you're not going to want to miss this world premiere, especially of Maggie, portrayed by my guest Joy Pace, head of McNeese Theater, and written by Carolyn Woosley here.
I wanted to say one other thing. We're really grateful to our grantors and the fact that this is a Bicentennial Commission-endorsed event. And we've had a lovely time working with the Bicentennial Commission, and they're proud, and we're proud to be bringing Louisiana some of her own heroes, I should say heroines.
Mm-hmm.
And so the city and the parish are behind us, and we have a number of grants also. Right. Proud of that.
Well, I think anyone listening to this and hearing about some of these women, they may have heard their name before but didn't know much about them before, will probably be quite hopeful that you'll continue unearthing these histories and writing these monologues and making them come alive for all of us and to know more about our history and the women over the past 200 years here in Louisiana.
Well, I think I haven't produced four yet, so we have 13 to go. We have 13 written. I have 13 written, but several to be produced yet.
Well, we'll look forward to either the Itinerant Theater doing them or other companies mm-hmm. Who may be interested in these monologues. Again, my guest Carolyn Woosley and Joy Pace. Carolyn Woosley writing wonderful monologues for women in Louisiana history, culture, a very diverse group of women, everyone from women in journalism to forestry to arts to music, in service sectors in Louisiana, a full range of women. You can find out more at Itinerant. Itinerant Theater? Do you have information about all of the monologues there? Or?
Yes. Yeah. The four current monologues we do at the itineranttheater.com address, not for the 13. They could see the, for example, we had an African-American company, the Originals, that toured in 2010, and we were really eager to get back to them, the Shreveport-based company under Angelique Pfister, who went to school with Joy at Centenary, of all things.
Small world.
Yeah, so they're lying at rest right now, waiting to be resurrected, or Clementine, Nellie, and Marie-Thérèse Coinquin, and others. But
there's no
not
place
right now
where people can go just to...
Oh, I'm sorry, it's LouisianaWomenOnStage.com would be the 2010 website, LouisianaWomenOnStage.com.
And that's still up, and people can read more about those monologues.
Yes.
Okay, you can explore that a little bit further at that website. If you're interested in getting tickets for this week for the Itinerant Theater's production of The Firsts, They Made a Difference, you can do that on the Itinerant Theater website. Search for that, and I'm sure it'll pop up. Make your reservations now. So it will run this Thursday and Friday at the Imperial Calcasieu Museum in the gallery, and then for the next 2 weeks as well.
Correct. They're the 29th.
Okay.
And you can like us on Facebook.
So Facebook, please. What is that, Itinerant Theater?
Itinerant Theater on Facebook. We haven't started our Twitter chatter. We do have a Twitter page, but we're certainly active on Facebook. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so look for the Facebook as well, and if you like them, then you'll get information about what's coming up,
absolutely.
And they'll keep it up for you. You don't have to write it in your calendar either. Lots of information. So what are you doing this summer with the McNeese Theater? Do you have a production in the summer?
No, there's nothing going on at McNeese.
Okay. So we'll have to look forward to the fall.
All of my energies are going to this. Yes.
Well, we look forward to that. You all have such a great theater season, and I always look forward to getting the press releases from McNeese about your production.
Great.
So I'll look forward to that. But in the meantime, you can see the first They Made a Difference. See Joy in the role of Rosa Hart, as well as Maggie, who is Margaret Dixon, and Carolyn Woosley writing all these great monologues. And so what are you doing? Are you directing?
I am actually producing, directing two of them.
Okay.
And, well, I was the writer.
Okay.
But
yes.
I am producer-director. Okay. Of half, and Caroline Gale is the director of the other two.
You've had so many incredible roles with theater and the arts in Lake Charles, and I know everyone's very appreciative of that.
Well, we just planned to get the rest of the state and Texas and a few other states to fall in love with us, so... Come on, Louisiana.
Well, we'll
discover,
be looking, we'll be looking
us.
Forward to that. So you've got 3 weeks to see The Firsts, They Made a Difference, Itinerant Theater, and we look forward to future performances and hearing about all of the audiences that you reach with the Itinerant Theater and your work. Thank you both, Carolyn Woosley and Joy Pace.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you.
Joining me in the KRVS studios now is Jennifer Ritter-Guidry with the Center for Cultural and Ecotourism, here to talk about their backyard series that continues tomorrow with Atchafalaya Flora and Fauna. I think there's a little fauna here in the presentation. La Flore et la Faune de l'Atchafalaya. Always, you have these great French titles as well for the series. And it certainly is a fecund time in Louisiana with all the rain and things growing. So it's a good time to have this presentation. You all are quite seasonal. I was very good about that.
Well, we do try to be and try to make things as, you know, pertinent to what's going on in the community and what people have going on. Like, you know, everybody's getting out in the basin right now. It's too beautiful not to. And this is a wonderful way to learn more about your surroundings when you are out in the basin.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us about this presentation. Usually you have a presenter or a panel of people. Who's going to be involved tomorrow?
Well, we have our good friend Jim Delahousie. When he's not speaking, he's usually at the events as an audience member. And we're really excited to have him back to talk about Atchafalaya and his studies with it. He's done some work with some archaeological findings in the basin. So he's going to talk more about what the early dwellers were eating. Based on what evidence they found in the midden heaps and in the campfires and things like that. So we can talk more about what they were able to trap and catch and harvest among the plants and animals of the basin. And I think that'll be a really interesting perspective and not something that people are perhaps expecting to hear about, but it will be very, very enlightening.
How long has he lived out? He lives out in the basin too, doesn't he?
He does. I can't say exactly how long, but he does live out in Henderson, and he has a blog that he writes about it. I'm not sure how recently he's updated it, but he was back when the Mississippi was flooding. He was posting about the river rising and the levels rising in the basin and near his house. Mm-hmm. And joining him will be UL Lafayette's botanist from the biology department, Gary Landry, and he'll have plant samples, and he'll be talking about the different plants that you can find out in the basin.
Will Jim have slides?
There'll be a little PowerPoint presentation as well as discussion and the samples, so you can get kind of a hands-on kind of experience with it and maybe perhaps learn how to identify certain plants and learn what to stay away from, what's safe perhaps to eat or otherwise ingest some kind of a way or use safely.
Mm-hmm. As always, you encourage people to bring their own slides and stories, pictures, artifacts that they have questions about or would like to share with
absolutely.
That subject.
Yes, absolutely. We try to create a learning environment where there's a dialogue between the speakers and the audience, and therefore you can, you know, it allows you to really learn exactly what you wanted to get out of the topic.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned that people might find it surprising, some of the things that he says, and not to give away anything, but is there one thing that you found surprising?
Well, when I invited Gary to speak and talk about the flora and fauna of the basin and how different it is, he laughed. He said, you know, people expect it to be very different from the other areas of the state. In reality, it isn't. And that is surprising. You would think because it is somewhat isolated, and there are certain things that have grown because of the isolation. Mm-hmm. Then you also have the issues with invasive species, and he's going to talk about that as well. But overall, it's very similar to other parts of the state. Hmm.
And some of these flora and fauna have just simply adapted to living out in the basin. So as always, it's at Vermilionville.
Yes.
And where at Vermilionville?
We'll be in the Performance Center tomorrow evening, and it starts at 6:30, and of course the doors always open at 6, and food is available for purchase. I'm not quite sure what they'll be serving tomorrow night, but given the weather and things like that, I can anticipate it being a jambalaya or some other rice dish.
Mm-hmm. Do you encourage parents to bring children?
Oh, absolutely. That's been a wonderful thing with this year in the Backyard Series is that we've seen a significant growth in the younger members of the audience. And that's been really a wonderful way for all of us to learn because they have questions that we as adults don't always think to ask or we think might be, you know, too silly to ask and things like that. And children have no fear. They will ask. They have a question. They want it answered. They don't mind raising their hands and asking those questions. And it also just brings a lot more dimension to the events. Some of them are very hands-on, and it's been really wonderful to see how the kids have really kind of taken whatever the topic is and made it their own and worked through it and learned from it.
Mm-hmm. And a great way to continue to interest your children in science.
Absolutely.
A lot of students taking environmental science classes here at the university, and kids even younger getting very interested in that topic. And,
yeah, there's so many ways you can apply those more academic disciplines in a manner that really suits children. But as I said, you know, we encourage people of all ages to join us. We like to have the kids, but we want to have everybody. If you don't want to have the kids for the evening, that's fine. Come out and enjoy yourself. But we try to make it as easy as possible with food there and an environment where everybody is welcome and willing and excited about learning.
Mm-hmm. And it's really a lovely place to go. Mm-hmm. David Cheremy was here the other day, director of Vermilionville, and I was telling him it had been a while since I had been there. I had occasion to go last month, and it was just lovely. The homes are so well renovated, and the gardens around the houses
are
so nice. Yes, so a good opportunity to enjoy that space. And
yes.
Really a nice place to present all of this cultural information that you all have.
Absolutely. It's a good way to get out and learn a little bit more about the park if you haven't gone out there yet. It's such a wonderful resource for Louisiana, for Lafayette, and as well as Louisiana and all of its visitors to the state. It gives you a snapshot in time, and it allows us this wonderful presentation space so that we can kind of be more immersed in the topics that we're studying.
Mm-hmm.
And
I believe it was last month you all did a collaboration with them
right.
on their healing garden
That's right.
that they've just recently put in at Vermilionville.
Yeah, and some of our upcoming topics will be timed with some of their other culture days. We weren't able to do it with Creole Culture Day, which was yesterday, but future events will tie in very nicely, especially for Native American Culture Day and Acadian Culture Day. I know offhand.
Right. Well, we'll look forward to those. But for those who didn't get to go to that evening to see the Healing Garden, it's really worth going to Vermilionville to see that garden, which I believe they're going to change throughout the year.
Yes, it's
according to the
plants
season.
Are seasonal, mm-hmm. and so they will rotate in and out depending on the seasons and what grows best when and things like that. And I think they said they have a total of about 80 plants in the garden.
Rotating
through, and they have a beautiful guide to go with it. So
yeah, really, really nice handy guide if mm-hmm. you want to know more about healing plants in Louisiana or how they were used traditionally.
That's
as
true.
Healing plants.
Somebody
as well.
Asked me if we're going to be talking about edible plants mm-hmm. tomorrow night, and I said I can't say for certain, but in some fashion, I know it will come up.
Mm-hmm. You can ask about it.
Absolutely. I said, I hope to see you there.
That's right. Ask your question. Feel free to ask. If you're tuning in now, my guest is Jennifer Guidry with the Center for Cultural and Ecotourism. Their backyard series continues tomorrow evening with a program called Atchafalaya Flora and Fauna in the Vermilionville Performance Center. The program starts at 6:30, and as always, it is a free program
right.
and open to everyone.
That's right. It's grant funded, so we couldn't do it without the support of the Acadiana Center for the Arts and Decentralized Arts Funding Program and the Division of the Arts. We're very grateful, and we hope that we can continue funding.
Mm-hmm. So what do you have coming up throughout the summer, Jennifer? What programs
Let's
do you
see,
have?
Next month on July 10th is Louisiana Dance Halls, and we're working currently on a field work project about dance halls, and this will be a wonderful way to come out and get the community to come and talk to us about their stories and hear stories about dance halls and other areas, because it's very interesting. Dance halls were very localized, and you didn't travel too far beyond your own dance hall unless you were a musician and you were hired to play elsewhere. And there's so many wonderful stories about that. So we hope you can join us next month as well. And then in August, we're going to be talking about Swamp Pop. And we have Shane and Rod Bernard coming to talk to us about that. It's going to be a lot of fun. And then other topics include Louisiana and film, fact and fiction, the Lomax's field work in Louisiana. And then in November, we're doing a little workshop, a homemade instrument workshop, cigar box fiddles, washtub basses, and other instruments that you can create at home. We'll have the instruments and people there to help guide you through the process. And then in December, we always wrap up the year with an event in the cooking school where we cook and we just enjoy each other's company and talk. And this year we'll be talking about the evolution of Cajun and Creole cooking. And there will be, of course, food available.
And if you didn't write all those down,
it's on
you have
the
a website and yeah. you have a Facebook page
yes,
as well.
Yes,
I assume if you like that page, then you'll keep people apprised of
that's
the upcoming.
Right. That's right. You can find us at cceet.louisiana.edu. That's the acronym for the Center for Louisiana, Center for Cultural and Ecotourism. And there are no W's before that. You can find us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. Or just come up and visit us. The summer is real quiet in our office. We have a smaller crew than usual, and there's a lot of open computers if you want to come up and explore the archives and visit with us and talk to us about these topics or any other topics that you would like to find out more information about. We'd be happy to help you dig up information and try and get those stories documented.
Okay. Lots of reasons to visit the Center for Louisiana Studies, both CSET and also the UL Press
yep.
is up there, so you can peruse some of the books that they have and that are for sale up
That's
there as
right.
well. So a really good resource, cultural resource here at the University of Louisiana at Lafayette, open to everyone.
Yep.
So tomorrow evening you can go and find out more about the flora and fauna, the plants and animals of the Atchafalaya. Some great experts, again, Jim Dalhousie and Gary Landry, who is a botanist here at UL Lafayette.
Yep.
It starts at 6:30, but you can get food a little earlier,
yes,
I think.
Yes, the doors open at 6.
All right, good opportunity for us all to find out more about where we live. Thank you so much, Jennifer.
Thank you, Judith.
Thank you.
now a look at what's happening in the arts and culture in South Louisiana. Lots of camps for children this summer. The Acadiana Center for the Arts and the Lafayette Science Museum have teamed up for the Art and Science of Sound. They have camps throughout the summer. For more information, you can call either place, the ACA or the Lafayette Science Museum, or go to their website. The Children's Museum of Acadiana offering camps as well for kids. Ceramics camp, jewelry camp, camp construction. You can call them for more information. Vermilionville has some camps for kids as well, learning about the land and animals, and also a second camp on the history, imagining what it would be like to be a child in the 17th century in Acadiana. Very interesting camp. You can go to their website or call Vermilionville for more information about those camps. Cité des Arts is offering a Story Palooza in collaboration with the Acadiana Symphony Orchestra and AOC. It is a storytelling summer camp. At Cité also, Jim Phillips and Cherie Cohn presenting the Imagination Game Summer Camp. And with Crystal Place, Jim Phillips is offering They're Gonna Put You in the Movies Summer Camp. For those, you can contact Cité for information or registration. In Gran Coteau at Casa Azul this Thursday, there will be an oral history and literary nonfiction presentation. Joseph Bay Brooks will be giving an oral history of Gran Coteau, and his presentation will be filmed on Thursday by documentary filmmaker Sheree Bro. Constance Adler will be there. She teaches a creative writing workshop and has a blog called Emily Every Day. She's also publishing a memoir called My Bayou that takes place in New Orleans. She'll be at Casa Azul this Thursday. The program starts at 7 and goes until around 9 o'clock. Constance Adler will be here later on in the week to talk about her memoir. This Thursday at Cité des Arts, Jeff Albert's Instigation Quartet featuring Dickie Landry, Tim Daisy, and Joseph Butts, and we'll be speaking with them later in the week as well. 13 Moons is an original musical project featuring New Orleans musician Greyhawk Perkins, a Native American of the Choctaw and Houma Nations, and also a French jazz quartet from Montpelier will be there. That will be at Cité des Arts this Sunday, the 17th at 7 o'clock. We'll be announcing that throughout the week as well. Glass Mendacity will open at Cité des Arts this Friday, the 15th. We'll be speaking with Nathaniel Trahan about that this week as well. The Complete Women of William Shakespeare continues at Theater 810 this weekend on the 16th and 17th. For more information, you can call Theater 810 at 484-0172. That's The Complete Women of Shakespeare being directed by Kate Schneider. There will be a children's drumming circle at Cité des Arts this Saturday, June 16th from 2 to 3 p.m. For more information, you can contact Claire Hernandez or Cité des Arts. A poetry reading this Saturday by Dave Brinks and Megan Burns from New Orleans. They are poets, essayists, journalists, performers, and they will be in Lafayette this Saturday, 7 o'clock. They'll be reading downtown Lafayette at Carpe Diem. At the Hilliard University Art Museum, a new exhibit has opened up called Finding Egypt in Louisiana. Objects, artifacts, and writings from the Ambassador Jefferson Caffrey collection here at UL Lafayette. For more information, you can go to the Hilliard University website or give them a call. Theater 810 will present the Acadiana Repertory Theater's 2012 New Works Festival that will open next week on June 22nd. And for a listing of programs on KRVS, you can stop by our website, which is krvs.org, clicking on the schedule button and finding a weekly schedule, or you can look for individual programs and find out about your favorite programs. You can listen to archived editions of locally produced programs, or you can download them for listening to later on. Just find the program that you're interested in and click on it, and it will list a number of programs, episodes of programs here at KRVS. You can also support KRVS at any time securely at krvs.org. Click on the support button and find out the many ways that you can support KRVS. Your support is crucial to the work work we do here. You can become a program underwriter, you can support KRVS with an individual membership, or you can donate a vehicle to KRVS if you'd like to get that old car, truck, boat, or RV out of your garage or driveway. You can donate it to KRVS. At our website, you'll see a red button that says donate your vehicle. Click on it and you'll find a toll-free number you can call, or you can fill out information there about your vehicle and click to send it in, and someone will get back to you about that vehicle. Stay tuned to KRVS this afternoon and evening. We're with NPR's All Things Considered from 4 until 6 o'clock. From 6 to 7, Terry Gross hosts Fresh Air. At 7 o'clock, we begin our Monday night of opera. It's World of Opera, and tonight it's The Highwayman. That goes until around 11, at which time you can hear Cecil Doyle's Sounds Unusual. At midnight, it's The Sound Club, and at 1 o'clock in the morning, Terminal Addiction. In just a moment, we join NPR's All Things Considered. Thank you.